This is Bill Radke. Do you remember the story of the Tacoma woman who became known as Drunk Teacher?
Tonight, no one answered the door at the home of former Larchmont Elementary teacher Clara Bowman. Bowman was fired from her job last week after Tacoma public school officials say she was found drunk in front of a classroom full of kindergartners.
Bowman's story was all over the national news earlier this year, and she was ridiculed on social media. But in the Tacoma News Tribune, columnist Matt Driscoll asked for compassion. He wrote that this teacher, this human being, was clearly in a deep, life-threatening struggle with alcohol. Well, Clara Bowman never returned to work, and a few months later she died by suicide. That is when columnist Matt Driscoll decided he wanted to tell the story, the full story, of how Bowman ended up drunk in front of that classroom. So he went to Spokane, where she grew up.
In many ways, her childhood was perfect. You know, I'm sitting there in the living room with Tom and Robin, her parents, and they're telling stories of her teaching make-believe classes to her dolls and later her little sister, and having neighborhood kids over to the house and, you know, playing school there and, always being the teacher. I mean, it really seems like it was picture perfect in so many ways, but the big takeaway from Clara's childhood was the death of her sister from leukemia when Clara was 14 and her sister was 10. It was a life-changing event for the entire family, but one that certainly seemed to have an effect on Clara.
As her parents looked back, what do they remember about how Clara coped or had trouble coping with her sister's death?
Well, both her parents and I spoke with friends who grew up with her, and the main picture I got was of someone who just coped by filling her life with activity. I mean, she was already an outgoing, active person, in school and her social life. But from what I understand, when her sister passed, it just amped up. I mean, she was just busy constantly with whether it was school activities or social life activities. She just was filled her life with activity. And, I, of course, that's the thing about this story is we're looking at it in retrospect, and now you can make all these connections that I'm sure were difficult to make at the time. But the way it's told to me is, now that's kind of seen as a coping mechanism. And she was also the type of person who didn't want people to be unhappy. So I think she shouldered a lot of the burden of kind of being, being a person who could lift other people up in that time of tragedy and their strength and staying busy and appearing happy. And so there was that. And then, of course, also her parents say that she started drinking at 15, so a year after her sister's death. And at the time, again, I think her parents probably viewed that as pretty typical high school stuff. I mean, she was still excelling in school and all these outward signs, wasn't having a problem yet. But she started drinking at 15, and there's a quote in the story her mom's telling of Clara describing that first experience with alcohol and, just how much she loved it. And her mom's takeaway from that is it was numbing the pain. So I think she went to, like so many alcoholics or folks dealing with significant trauma, I think she went to great lengths to kind of hide it, and there was also a self-medication factor there. So,
fast forward to when Clara Bowman is an adult teaching kindergarten in Tacoma. She was discovered drunk in her classroom not one time, but two times at least, first in February 2011 and then again in February of 2016. And it sounds like February might not have been a coincidence.
That's certainly the interpretation of friends and family. Her sister, Brita, passed away in late January, and that was known to be kind of a difficult anniversary for Clara throughout her life. I heard a lot of stories about, just even dating back to college, about how she was known to struggle during that time of year, disappear, drinking would increase. Friends kind of came to almost expect it, or they certainly were aware of it. And so, like I said, I think that was kind of a lifelong burden she carried.
Matt, all of us have some kind of pain, and most of us don't get blackout drunk in front of a kindergarten classroom. How do you feel about a reader who was angry about that and expressed that anger on social media?
No, I understand it. I mean, that's one of the things about this story is, some of the reaction I've gotten is, why did we cover it at all? Why did news organizations cover it at all? And I mean, I want to be clear. I think it was, and I think Clara's parents agree with this too. I mean, I think we all understand why it was news. I mean, here in Tacoma, it was a story. I mean, she's a public employee. She's a kindergarten teacher. She's responsible for a class full of 5- and 6-year-olds, and in the midst of her disease was making incredibly poor decisions that potentially put those kids in danger. And so I certainly understand the anger reaction there. I think that's natural. This was something that happened, and it was a story that had to be told. But I think, you know, once you go outside of Tacoma, I think that line becomes a little less clear. I mean, was it news in Denver? Was it news in New York? I'm not so sure. And again, I mean, I think those of us who work in the media kind of understand the way these things sometimes develop. The way the salacious details started kind of leading the story, I think that's what was problematic for me, was the story just kind of took on a life of its own, and all of a sudden you've got media outlets tweeting out, you know, all the sort of details, you know, find out at 10 just how drunk the Tacoma teacher was. I mean, yes, it was news, but did it have to be reported the way it was, and what was the motivation for doing so? And, you know, I think a lot of times the motivation for doing so is just the obvious, increasing viewership, increasing clicks on the internet, and, you know, that's a problematic practice sometimes, I think.
Well, why would that sordid detail telling of the story, why would that increase viewership? In other words, what is it about us that that's what we wanted the story to be?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I don't know. Does it make us feel better to vilify this woman in the middle of her disease? I don't know. I mean, is it just something that we're so detached from it that it seems funny? You know, look how drunk this woman was. Oh my, you know, how many bottles did she have? I don't know the answer to that, but I think we've seen it enough times to know it's a pattern.
Well, it's a weird relationship with alcohol and drugs that we have, that it's funny until it's not.
Right. I spoke to a number of experts, and the kind of what I kept hearing is, you know, we've normalized risky drinking behaviors, unhealthy drinking behaviors, and that's kind of become a normally accepted thing in our society until someone like Clara Bowman has real struggles with it, real issues with it, and then all of a sudden she's vilified and becomes a punchline for being unable to deal with it. And I think that's, you know, there are questions for all of us in this story, not just the media. And I think, you know, from a societal perspective, that's one of the big ones, is about our relationship to alcohol and drugs, and how we've kind of normalized these things until somebody really struggles, and then they almost become an outcast.
You wrote back when she was fired that you hoped Clara Bowman would get help, and it looked like she was getting help.
Yeah, shortly after the firing, she did an inpatient program in Yakima, and it wasn't her first attempt at sobriety. She'd done AA. She'd done a number of things throughout her entire life, but like is so often the case, unfortunately, it didn't stick for her, and that's one of the tragedies here.
What do we know about how she came to die?
You know, she was found at a motel in Kent. You know, I think the medical examiner ruled it a suicide from a mix of alcohol and various over-the-counter and prescription drugs, and, you know, that's a ruling that, you know, everyone reluctantly kind of accepts at this point. Just a really sad story.
Matt, Clara Bowman's parents opened up to you to not only retell Clara's story, but to tell it in a fuller way. What's been accomplished? What matters about us learning the truth about Clara?
Yeah. To me and to her parents, it goes back to that humanizing factor, I think. In the midst of that story of her firing and when she was national news for 2 days back in March, you know, you didn't see a human. You just saw a headline. You just saw a punchline, and that was difficult for the parents to deal with, and it was difficult for me to accept. And furthermore, I mean, for me personally, the way it ended, to have gotten the first half of the story about her firing and the mistakes, and kind of have that be the story of her without knowing how the story ended, it just seemed incredibly unfair. So, I mean, hopefully now we have a picture of Clara Bowman as a person who a lot of people cared a lot about, who was really good at her job, who struggled incredibly with alcohol and trauma and depression and anxiety and other things. you know, we add a level of humanity to that story that was previously missing.
Matt Driscoll, columnist for the Tacoma News Tribune, telling you the fuller story of Clara Bowman, more than the drunk teacher you might have heard about earlier this year. Research shows 90% of people who die by suicide also suffer from some kind of substance abuse or mental health disorder. And again, we've said it before, if you or somebody you know needs help, you can call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And that phone number is 800-273-TALK, 800-273-8255.